The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand. Join the Hyundai revolution.
Will I give you the second clue? Yes, I will. Okay, here's the second clue. Now, Jim Lockhart, you're not allowed to open your mouth here because I think everyone in the country is going to know this. But anyway, this is the second clue if you want tickets to Robert Plant live at the Marquee on the 14th of June. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure because, you know, sometimes words have two meanings. If you don't know that, anyhow, sometimes words have two. Well, the meanings of words, that's what we're going to be talking about now, because there's a book that came into the office during the week that caught our eye. It's called Poems to Make Grown Men Cry. And it's a collection of 100 poems that have been put together by father and son, Anthony and Ben Holden. And these are poems from men who picked a poem that moved them, just and wrote a little introduction to say why. Colm Tobin's in there. He picked Orpheus, Eurydice and Hermes by Rainer Maria Rilke. Seamus Heaney selected The Voice by Thomas Hardy. You'll find selections from Billy Collins, Colin Firth, Hugh Bonneville. They're all in there. And it got us thinking that most of us, and actually even hardened men up in our office, when you said, do you ever cry at a poem? And they said, no, no, no. And then they come back to you 5 minutes later and say, well, there is one, and these couple of lines, and they'd quote you. I won't tell you who that was, but anyhow, you can guess.
So like Mel Corner.
We decided to ask men that we know have caring hearts and thoughtful minds and lyric thoughts. They are Jim Lockhart, musician and radio producer and all-round Renaissance man. Brent Pope, a man who knows his rugby and his ironing board and launched his own clothing line recently. On the line soon we're going to have a brilliant new writer I want you to meet. He's only 23. He won the first fiction and the overall prize at the New Irish of the New Irish Writer at the Hennessy New Irish Writing Awards this week. He's Brendan McLaughlin, and I'll talk to him in a moment. But Jim Lockhart, I suppose we wouldn't be surprised that you read poetry, and you're passionate about this one, aren't you?
I started off, I think, probably before I was kind of into music, I was into poetry. I used to read an awful lot of poetry. I mean, as a kid even, I read an awful lot of poetry. And I remember being very overwrought when Brendan Behan died, because I was a great fan of Behan. And Behan is seen as this kind of great drunkard and just a messer. But in fact, the poetry he wrote in Irish was just gorgeous. He's got a poem called Jackie and a Queen and a Mlascaith that he wrote, I think, in Mountjoy in 1948 or 1950, which is just astonishing. And he's a completely different character in that kind of Irish incarnation. So, yeah, I would have been very, very deeply into poetry. And the Christian Brothers, God bless them, and a great English teacher we had called Peter O'Driscoll opened like vast amounts of doors for us.
And Brent, are you a man who connects with poetry, or what did you make picking up?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, coming to Ireland, you're probably more aware of it, not taking away anything from New Zealand culture, but you're kind of, I suppose, as a young wannabe rugby player, you're, I suppose, force-fed poetry. But I think it all comes down to having, as I said, a great teacher. I was more into writing. I love writing, you know, short stories. I've written a few children's book. Poetry, yes. I read poetry. I wouldn't be quite as moved, I'd say, although I'd have to say, getting this book, I loved it. And it did take me back when I first looked at the cover, I suppose a bit corny, poetry makes me cry. But when you read the stories behind the selections of some of the people, it does make you very emotive. It does make you start thinking about the words. And there definitely is a connection. I say I love art and I love writing. So there's definitely a connection between words and emotions. And just, you know, like, hopefully we'll get a chance to read a couple of the poems that we picked out. But I mean, it's an amazing book. It really is an amazing book.
There is something about poetry, isn't it, that makes us stop and start talking. And before I go to Brendan McLaughlin, who's just a whippersnapper of a 23-year-old, do you think that there's something about poetry, that poetry you learnt in your youth, you know, the way those lines come back to you as you get older, and maybe they mean more? Is there something
well,
in all
see,
of that?
I think a lot of the problems, and I'm not, you know, I'm just going on my experience, a lot of the poetry I was kind of, I suppose, going back to the word force-fed when I was young, was the older poetry. I mean, the poems that I've got the most out of in this book are the modern poets. I'm not a great fan. I know there were some great literacy writers, and you're probably going to slag me for it, but I'm more about sort of modern poetry because I think that the kind of stanzas and the words mean more to me emotionally than perhaps going back and trying to, I suppose, fangle through what the meanings were. And I mean, I think that's, but I mean, that's part of Irish culture. You've had, Jim, you've had poetry so long and part of your culture of legends and part of your culture of, you know, going
and
back.
And do poems come back and mean more to you?
They do, from time to time. And somebody makes the point in one of the intros in the book that the poems that mean a lot to, the poems that make a young man cry are different to the poems that make a grown man cry, which is an interesting point. But I would totally second what Brent says, because it's when I look back at the ones that had kind of jumped out at me from this collection, and it's a brilliant collection, they were the modern poets. They were the more modern ones. A lot of the stuff was stuff that I didn't know. And I love anthologies, because poetry anthologies are great, because you find nuggets. You find they're like a box of chocolates.
one for everyone in the audience.
Yeah, but you find stuff that you just wouldn't have picked up on before. I remember at one stage in Irish college, we had a teacher who went on at us about Schiller and Rilke. A man called Amurachu, again, another great teacher, revelatory teacher. And I had always sort of had at the back of my mind, I must get into Schiller and Rilke one of the days. But there's a Rilke poem here. It's the one that Colm Tobin picks out. And it's astonishing. It's in translation, but it's absolutely gorgeous. And there were loads of revelations like that. And in general, it was modern stuff that was the revelation.
I think it has to connect with an emotional feeling you have yourself. And when you read the sort of prefaces of them about people, about loss, about death, about unrequited love or whatever, it's those things that suddenly turn you to your own memories. Yeah. You know, rather than just read the words, you suddenly think about, I pictured some young man or something reading this as a eulogy or something for a lost parent or a lost loved one. And that's where the emotion would come in for me, picturing that person or picturing myself.
Okay, you line up the couple of words there. Have you got any of that Rilke there, Jim?
Rilke is
You find the page. And actually, while you're finding the page, Brendan McLaughlin, first of all, congratulations to you. 23 years old, Hennessy New Irish Writer of the Year. You got it for the first fiction and the overall prize. Has it sunk in yet? That was a fantastic award for someone so young.
I think it's just starting to sink in now. I mean, I had absolutely no inclination or expectation that I'd win anything that night. I just wanted to go and enjoy myself. I think it's now that the dust is starting to settle, it's starting to sink in a bit more.
What are the poems that make young men cry?
I don't know. I think with poetry, every reading is unique to the person reading it, and it always comes back to your own experiences or how you're feeling at any given time that you pick up a poem. I think it's about empathy for me when I read poetry, and if you can relate to the words on the page, and that's what kind of brings up the emotion within myself.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're writing short stories, of course, and the story you won with was a really fantastic story, called The Last Breath, influenced by your mother's death, I think. But it seemed to me, anyhow, to be incredibly strong writing for somebody so young. But did you start off writing poetry?
No, I've never even attempted poetry. I think it's the hardest form of writing. And it's, I think when you've got such short amount of space, every single word has to matter, whereas with prose, you've got a bit more wiggle room. So it's never even considered writing poetry.
I think it was Pat Rabbit quoting that line in an interview he did a while back with Sean O'Rourke about campaigning in poetry and governing in prose. But anyhow, let's get back to the poetry. Jim Lockhart, you've got some of that Rilke there for us.
Yeah, it goes on for a couple of pages, and it's about Orpheus leading his wife, his dead wife Eurydice, back from the underworld, and he's walking ahead, and the deal that he's made with the gods is that he can bring her back from death if he doesn't look around. And so she's being brought along behind him by the god Hermes, and he says his senses felt as though they were split in two. His sight would race ahead of him like a dog, stop, come back, then rushing off again, would stand impatient at the path's next turn. But his hearing, like an odour, stayed behind. Sometimes it seemed to him as though it reached back to the footsteps of those other two who were to follow him up the long path home. But then once more it was just his own steps echo, or the wind inside his cloak that made the sound. He said to himself they had to be behind him, said it aloud and heard it fade away. They had to be behind him, but their steps were ominously soft. If only he could turn around just once, but looking back would ruin this entire work so near completion. Then he could not fail to see them, those other two who followed him so softly. And it goes on, and just towards the end, it talks about Eurydice being like a fruit deep within herself, being dead filled her beyond fulfillment, like a fruit suffused with its own mystery and sweetness. She was filled with her vast death, which was so new she couldn't understand that it had happened.
Oh my God. You see, there is something, isn't it, about the way that poetry kind of distills something down. And I mean, I'd be the last person in the world sometimes to pick up a book of poetry. I'd be much more inclined to reach for a thriller. But they don't stay with you, Brent, do you? Do they, thrillers? And, you know, there is something about a line or two of poetry that can worm its
Absolutely.
Way inside your head.
And funny enough, I mean, and I know it's a poem that's often quoted, but I live my life in a certain regard to Kipling's If. I just think it has wonderful life lessons, you know, that I would, you know, even as a rugby coach, as a player, I would often look at that poem and, you know, if you can give more than 60 seconds run, you know, all these things I would use as motivational to players I would have been talking to or to myself. And that's a poem. But it's a whole way of life for me, strangely enough. It's just got so many great, wonderful life messages.
Did you use that in coaching, yeah?
I did.
Wow.
Because to try to tell the players that, you know, to give everything you've got,
yeah.
You know, then you'll be a man, my son. And I just think it's a wonderful, it's a very emotional poem for me. And I used to write down lines of it on my hand before going out to a match, you know, if you can give everything you've got, you know. And also to be more humble, you know, if you can walk with kings or whatever, you know.
Not lose
the common touch, which is a wonderful way of saying, like, you know, don't be a snob in modern terms.
It is amazing to think of a rugby player going out with a line of poetry written on his hand.
Yeah, I used to write it on my hand, and I used to go away to a private place and I would just look at the 60 seconds run and try to do everything I could to be better, you know. But again, it's a modern poem, well, modernish in the sense of its translation, but...
What have you got for us there?
I've got actually Daniel Radcliffe, better known as Harry Potter, I suppose, chooses a poem from Tony Harrison, who's a 20th century English poet. But it's about a son mourning the loss of his parents. I'm just going to read you the first two quick verses and then the last one. It's called Long Distance 2. Though my mother was already 2 years dead, Dad kept her slippers warming by the gas, put hot water bottles her side of the bed, and still went out to renew her transport pass. You couldn't just drop in, you had to phone. He'd put you off just an hour to give him more time, to clear away her things and look alone, as though his raw love were such a crime. And then it goes on, but the last verse is great, I think. I believe life ends with death, and that is all. You haven't both gone shopping just the same. In my new black leather phone book, there's your name, and the disconnected number I still call.
Oh my God.
I just think that first part about, though my mother was already 2 years dead, Dad kept her slippers warming by the gas and put her hot water bottles her side of the bed. You know, it's about this love affair parents had for so many years, and suddenly she is gone and he is lonely without her.
And in the ordinary things,
it's the water bottle that he's so used to putting there, and then suddenly it's gone and he thinks, and it goes on about waiting to hear the sound of the rusty lock when she comes home and... just thinking she's popped out for a cup of tea. And I just thought of those people that are sitting out there, I suppose, alone. And that's why people, again, you know, talk about empathy. People that are alone have elderly neighbours to pop around and say hello, because there's people out there that have lost, you know, life partners. And that's exactly the situation they're in. They think
there's a lovely poem in there, actually, called The Widower. And again, it's about a man on his own who gets up late now and how he fills his day and that whole business that people trying
and
to...
That's really
Brendan,
sad
actually,
me.
I want to bring you in here because you're a bit closer to school, obviously, than the rest of us. Do people still learn off poems by rote? If I had to say, produce a couple of lines of poetry, would you be able to produce the quotes straight away?
Yeah, I think certainly at that English Leaving Cert level, so much of it is based around poetry. And there's one Philip Larkin poem, 1914, that always sticks in my head, just before, I think he's looking back at World War One, where the very last stanza starts with, never such innocence, never before or since. And, you know, there are others with Elizabeth Bishop or Adrian Rich, who I did in school, and they just stick with you, I think.
And it's funny, isn't it, in terms of all those anniversaries as well. It's the poetry so much that people are going back of those war poets. And is there something about men in poetry more than women in poetry, do you think, Brendan?
I don't know. I have to actually say two of my favourite poets are women, Elizabeth Bishop and Adrian Rich. I think when you look at poets, there are more men poets out there, or males are the ones who are more celebrated. But I think... in modern poetry, it's the women who are kind of making headwaves. I think about, you know, Sinead Morrissey or Maeve McGuckian from an Irish context. So I think the tide is turning a little bit there.
And Brent, would a poem ever make you cry?
Would a poem ever make me cry? I tend not to get emotional when I read prose or poetry. I think for me, a poem that's touched me will kind of leave me feeling speechless afterwards. There's that kind of
all right.
Silence.
What about you, Brent?
Yeah, I'm a very, you know, despite the kind of, I suppose, the kind of hard man rugby image, and I mean, I was an aggressive rugby player and was tough enough, there's a certain part of my, I suppose, emotive side that is pretty well developed. I mean, yeah, I would get, if I see a sad movie, I hear a sad song, mm-hmm. or I read a sad poetry, or I read a sad bit of prose, yeah, it does make me very upset, because I'm probably pretty much in tune with memories of how I felt at different situations, and certainly, you know, being on occasions where somebody, you know, has gone out of the way. Even look, the Brian O'Driscoll thing, when he started crying on the television when he was in his last game, that welled most of the male population up, because suddenly they connected with this guy that had given so much, and suddenly he couldn't hold back, so why should they? And I think, you know, it's nice to have that feeling, isn't it? I think it's nice to be able to look in the side and don't do the hard man thing and say, oh, your poetry doesn't make you cry, because I think it should make men feel upset. I think it should connect with someone. Everybody's had disappointments in their lives and sad days happy days.
And does poetry suit melancholia and memory? Is, you know, is there that whole bittersweet thing concentrated?
Woe is me.
Well, no, but not in a I'm going to burst into tears kind of way,
no.
But like that, noticing the empty hot water bottle, which is a very mundane thing, but you put that into a poem and it becomes a metaphor for grief,
yeah,
and loss.
Exactly.
And loneliness.
I think, you know, when you read the title of the book, Poems That Make Grown Men Cry, I think men would look at that and say, is it this sort of weeping uncontrollably? No, I just think it's something that touches, you know, a certain poem will touch some emotive sense or feelings that they have been there, done that, and it will, I suppose, it will bring back those memories, and that will make them teary-eyed, it will make them upset, and it could be, you know, it certainly would be over the loss of someone that you've loved, and we've all lost people in our lives, and something that would touch a memory about them is very emotive.
And Jim, when we were talking about this yesterday, we were both waxing lyrical about John Donne, both, you know, those early very romantic and very raunchy poems, actually, and also the later ones, which are very much about death and loss and sadness, because his wife died when he was only 35 and he spent the rest of his life mourning her, really, and looking to die. But we were also talking about a poet people often overlook because they're so used to his comedies, of course, and that's Oscar Wilde.
Oh, yeah. He was gorgeous. Ballad of Reading Jail. I mean, it's very, really powerful stuff.
I looked up that stanza because I wanted to get the quotes right.
Each man kills the thing he loves.
Yet each man kills the thing he loves. By each let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look. Some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss. The brave man with a sword.
Yeah.
There's something about, actually, I think it's an incredibly, even though it's incredibly long, it's a very modern piece of work. It's a very modern piece of poetry and writing.
Yeah, but even when he was writing his children's stories, like The Selfish Giant and the Garden, all that stuff, they were prose stories, but they were written as poetry. I mean, he had such a feel for language and he had such grace in his language that reading those stories, as we did to our kids, is like reading poetry. But that just to come back to, before we forget it, the Brent's poem, that one that Daniel Radcliffe, which kind of surprised me, chose Tony Harrison. What's nice about this, incidentally, I don't know if I've said it, but this is a gorgeous collection, and it's such a brilliant idea for an anthology. And the little bits of intros are interesting because they give you a kind of sidelight into people's angles on things. And Daniel Radcliffe says, Tony Harrison is, in my opinion, the most important English poet of the latter half of the 20th century, blah, 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 blah. He's simply a son here mourning the loss of his parents. If the last line doesn't bring you up short, you have a heart the size of a snow pea. And the last line is gorgeous because
the
one I just said, he can't connect them, he can't call them anymore, and they're still in the book.
But it's the detail in my new black leather phone book. There's your name and the disconnected number I still call.
Oh, yes.
So like he's the kid who's gone off down to London and he's made good and and he's the kind of middle class kid, and his dad's real sort of northern working class, and his mum and dad are obviously in this.
Guys, you're all getting Leaving Cert A's here. I'm going to actually finish with a poem, Brent. Will you give us the final poem?
I'll just give you again a bit. This is Tom Hiddleston, who's an up and coming young act, well, youngish, born in 81, but he picks this Love After Love, Derek Walcott. But again,
that was
it's
my main revelation in this one as well.
Yeah, it's just it's about loving yourself, and I think I work a lot with people with mental health problems. I've had my own mental health history, which is well documented now. But I think it's all about loving yourself, and it's all about getting teenagers, people to say, you know, I think is a lovely line, enough is enough. But but just the opening kind of, I suppose, the opening one is it's called Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome. And I just think that's lovely. It's like kind of, you know, you'll smile at being who you are, that you're finding. And in this day and age, and the Celtic Tiger and all these things that people have to go through, it's about loving yourself, isn't it? Isn't that the crucial part of happiness?
So beautifully put. That poem is just amazing.
It does go on, but it's really about, you know, looking at yourself, isn't it? To greet yourself in the mirror and smile and say, hey, you know, I'm okay. You know, it's just me. Enough is enough.
Well, that's been a lovely interlude. I hope the men and women listening have enjoyed all of that. They are bringing out a book, apparently, Poems That Make Grown Women Cry, so it's not...
we can argue that then.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? If they do, we'll get you back and we'll have a...
But I think it'd be a lovely thing for some people to take out, and we've enjoyed reading it, Jim. I think it's a lovely thing that people could do at a pub or something. They could have a poetry reading where you could have a sort of a battle off, you know, to see who can make the other ones cry.
Well, you might find yourself in demand as a poetry reader there, Brent. You'd never know what we'd be getting the next time.
That'll end all my rugby credibility completely.
Yeah, and we'd be looking at for the quotes and all the rugby players' hands from here on in. Listen, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you very much.
It really was a pleasure. And thank you also to Brendan McLaughlin, the Hennessy New Irish Writer. And thank you to him for joining us from Scotland, where he's that's the day job. He's doing an internship over there. And I really enjoyed that. Thank you all. We'll have more, including your third clue for our Robert Clancy ticket after the break.
1850 715 150.